Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Brian Hefty, live from the Morton Studio. Today on the show, we're going to be talking a little about post-emerge grass herbicides in wheat. My brother Darren's out doing some agronomy training, working with some agronomists today. We have a lot of fun doing that. We enjoy talking agronomy all the time. Now, if you've got a grass issue in your wheat, this is one of the things, agronomically speaking, I'm just going to tell you, this is a major concern. I don't care what kind of grass you have, but there are some grasses that are worse than others. For example, they say when it comes to yield loss, one wild oats plant is equivalent to about 10 foxtail plants. So, I mean, certainly we're more concerned about certain grasses than others, but the big thing is this. I don't care exactly which grass crop we're talking about here. Today, our topic is wheat. But whether it's barley, oats, corn, even any grass crop, we're always going to be worried about grass first. The reason why is because it's hard to kill a grass in another grass plant, in another grass crop, I should say. So when we have broadleaf weeds we're trying to kill in corn or wheat, for example, easy. We got lots of great herbicide options. When we're trying to kill grass in a broadleaf crop like soybeans or even sunflowers, we have plenty of options. I'm not worried at all. No big deal. But when you're trying to kill a broadleaf in a broadleaf crop, or like today's topic, killing a grass in a grass crop, that's a little bit challenging. Here's the next thing. We're talking about post-emerge grass herbicides in wheat. Well, if you're like most farmers, you want to get as much done as you can every pass through that field. So chances are you're going to mix a broadleaf herbicide together with your grass herbicide. Here's the problem. A lot of the broadleaf herbicides antagonize or negatively affect the performance of the grass herbicide. It's just the way it's always been. Even today, that's what we see. So if you throw a broadleaf herbicide in with that grass killer, I'm just telling you, your control is not going to be as good. Now, it's no big deal if you got 100 weeds in the field. If you have 100 million weeds in the field, though, it's a massive, major concern. So what we're always going to suggest is this. Scout the field first. If you don't have a whole lot of weeds out there, no big deal. Go ahead and tank mix or spray some kind of combo product. Kill your grass and broadleaves, you're fine. Keep in mind with wheat, we have narrow row spacing. The wheat usually does a great job choking weeds out. And even if you don't completely kill every last weed, it's usually not the end of the world. The wheat gets ahead and you're fine. Your yield's pretty good. But like I say, if you've got a weedy disaster, you have so much grass out there, it's a nightmare. Here are two suggestions for you. One, if all you're doing is spraying post-emerge herbicides, spray the grass killer first, then come back with the broadleaf killer a week to 10 days later. All right. Don't do it the other way around, because what we find is a lot of times the broadleaf herbicide negatively impacts that grass weed just enough so it's not actively growing a week or 10 days later. And then you spray that grass herbicide and you go, I don't know. I just don't have the best control. Well, you don't, because the grass isn't very actively growing. Flipping it around, you spray the grass herbicide first. The grass herbicides don't have a lot of impact usually on many of your broadleaf weeds. So no big deal there. You can go spray that broadleaf killer a week to 10 days later. The broadleaves are still actively growing and you get great control then. So always spray the grass herbicide first if you're going to split things. And again, I know you don't want to split. I know you don't want to make an extra trip, but if you have lots of grass, let's say it's one field on your farm, just split it, please. You'll have better control, which ultimately leads to better yield. And also, better control means fewer weeds next year. That can be a really big thing. I'll just give you an example on our own farm with soybeans. We had one year where we had sprayed Accent, and it was in corn. And we decided, you know, it didn't work the best on part of the field where we did this trial. Let's just let it go. Okay, so we did. Well, the very next year in soybeans, what did we have? We sprayed our normal rate of pre-emerge herbicide in soybeans. And you would have thought we didn't spray anything. It's like, oh my gosh, why is this so bad? And then we were, oh yeah, that's right. Last year we let that grass go on that side of the field. And then the next year, and the next year, and the next year. It was 6 years that we were fighting that stupid grass. I just remember telling the people on our farm, I'm like, oh, okay, I've learned my lesson. Never again are we letting stuff go to seed. That is bad news. All right, so my first piece of advice, again, spray the grass herbicide first if you're going to split apply. Second piece of advice is this. If you know going into the year you got extra grass pressure there, just use a pre. It's not that big a deal. You got Prepare. You've got either Anthem Flex or Zidua. They both contain the same active ingredient that's in that Zidua, group 15. Now, Anthem Flex also has AIM in it, a burn-down product for broadleaves. So anyway, either way you go, you've got a good pre-emerge grass herbicide program for yourself there. Now, sure, if you're in continuous wheat, you could use something like Olympus, Outrider. Even PowerFlex could potentially be used in winter wheat that is going to rotate to another crop. But my point here is use something pre-emerge. Then when you come post-emerge, you shouldn't have so much grass, and maybe you can go ahead and mix that grass herbicide together with the broadleaf killer. So with grass control in wheat, I'm, again, just going to implore you, please, if you've got a lot of it out there, and especially if you know going into the season, just plan ahead. It's not that big a deal. We've got plenty of great grass herbicides, but the antagonism will really hurt you if you've got a lot of grass weeds out there. So putting a grass herbicide together with a broadleaf herbicide can be trouble in terms of grass control. So if you've got a major problem, split, apply it, and if possible, use a pre-emerge herbicide. So I will just tell you, on our farm, anytime we plant wheat, quite frankly, anytime we plant any small grain, we got a pre down. Now, most of the time, we're going after broadleaves, so I might spray something like Sharpen. Just remember, Sharpen doesn't help you at all on grass. So if your target is grass, use one of the grass pre's like Prepare, Zidua, or Anthem Flex. All right, we're going to talk post-emerge grass herbicides next. We're going to get to the phone lines. And after that, we got a lot of questions in the Ag PhD mailbag. That's all coming up. Stay tuned.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from agronomy manager Nate Honeck.
We've seen tremendous weed control that was sprayed in dry, hot conditions with very little rain within 2 weeks after application. Very easy application. Definitely tank mix well with the various products we used.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
My mom's got a new Case IH tractor and it can do it all. Bale hay all day. See in the dark with its powerful LED lights. Hook up all the implements. Shift like a race car. Steer with ease. And it can also cool my juice box. Yeah, her Case IH tractor can do everything she needs it to.
Looking for a tractor that can do it all? Check out CaseIH.com.
Higher yield potential starts with the season-long systemic disease protection of Xyway brand fungicides from FMC. Xyway brand fungicides protect corn crops from key foliar diseases and support physiological benefits that help develop healthier, higher yielding corn for a difference you'll appreciate at harvest. Visit your FMC retailer for an at-plant advantage. Always read and follow all label directions.
What's the difference between John, who bought Enlist One herbicide and Instinct Next Gen nitrogen stabilizer, and Tom, who bought Enlist One and Instinct Next Gen and used True Choice? Only about $5,000 extra in Tom's pocket. Choose True Choice and get up to 10% back. It's really as simple as that. Start saving at Corteva.com/save more.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, broadcasting today from the Morton Studio, just talking a little about post-emerge grass herbicides in wheat. And first up on the show today, we got Marcus Weatherhead with Corteva. Marcus, how are you today?
Good, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Thanks for being on. All right, so we're talking grass control in wheat. You're from out in Montana. What's the most popular product out there where you're at?
Yeah, we're really comfortable out here. Open Sky has become a real popular product out here. You know, as far as cheatgrass control or any sort of grass control, Brian, you know, I'd say, you know, it starts with that good pre, and then that just makes a lot of Corteva's Group 2s, you know, whether it's Gold Sky or Open Sky, PowerFlex, just shine that much brighter too. So those are probably the more popular ones, PowerFlex, Open Sky, and Gold Sky for us.
Yeah, so it's that PowerFlex. That's, I guess that's usually what I say is in Open Sky and Gold Sky, although there's a little more safener in there with that too, as opposed to the straight PowerFlex. But the point here is simply that active ingredient is in all three products. So rather than doing the straight product, this is what I was talking about in the first section. We sometimes will tell guys, hey, if you get a weedy disaster solid grass, why not spray the grass killer first, then come back with something else for broadleaves? But with Open Sky and Gold Sky, what are you seeing for antagonism? Just talk to me about the performance on grass control if I did have a disaster and I use Open Sky or Gold Sky versus spraying PowerFlex by itself.
Yeah, you know, that goes into some of the tank mixes, right, Brian? When you start getting into some of the ECs, you know, the LV6s, you start kind of running into some of that. But to your point, if there's not a good pre-down and you do have an absolute outbreak come springtime, we see more and more guys have a lot more success with that, just like what you said, right? Doing an early application of a PowerFlex and following it up with your broadleaf application. So, you know, it kind of goes into if you do a good pre, you can probably get away with a two-pass. But if you struggle with that burn down, and we have, you know, in drought conditions in Montana, we can have cheatgrass and other grass winter annuals come up, say if it Chinooks off in February, right? So, you know, it could turn into a three-pass application come springtime if you do have an outbreak of some grasses in these winter wheat crops.
Yeah, so when you're talking about winter wheat, and a lot of these grasses are winter annuals, well, the best time to kill them is going to be in the fall. But a lot of people are waiting till spring, so you talk about Open Sky. Is that going to be enough? And if you are going to spray in the spring, okay, you talk about, all right, things might break dormancy early. What temperature do I need to wait for before I spray that Open Sky? Because I got to have actively growing weeds.
Correct. Yeah. Temperature is very important, especially when we start spraying any group twos for that matter. And I would say, you know, when it comes to temperatures, the highs are just as important as the lows. So at night, we don't like to get below freezing, but if we're above, you know, 60 degrees, like we can be during the day, which we were yesterday here in Montana, I would say for that plant to be able to metabolize that chemistry, the warm days during the daytime hours are just as important, right? So when it comes to those temperatures, the highs are just as important to pay attention to as the lows, in my opinion.
Yeah, and one thing I always tell guys is, please don't go spray on the first warm day. Your plant is not, those weeds aren't actively growing quite yet. Give it just a little bit of time, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. We say, you know, non-freezing on 3 days each side of the application is ideal, what we like to have.
Yep.
You know, that seems to work really good. And also to that, the adjuvant package that you're putting with some of these products, like Open Sky, Gold Sky, PowerFlex, those are something that we've been paying a lot more attention to recently around the correct amount of ammonium sulfate that you need to have with that adjuvant or with that product in that post application to make sure that plant has enough to metabolize that chemistry and bounce back from some of that notorious group two flash that we've seen around.
Talk to us a little bit more about the adjuvants. What specifically do you recommend?
So we like a minimum of a pound and a half of AMS per acre. That seems to really help with a couple different things, suppression and control. And those two can be used indifferently. I think suppression sometimes can be used as a bad word, Brian, but you know, when we're planting 1.5 million plants per acre, suppression is maybe all we need, right? So, it starts with that burn down, but you know, when it comes to the adjuvants, I like a pound and a half of ammonium sulfate per acre. If you're going to put a little NIS with that, that's fine. But you need to really watch your tank mixes. You know, if you're using those ECs, LV6s, bromoxynils, you know, back that off on the NIS. You probably don't need it at all.
Yeah, there are some hot herbicides that we often mix in wheat. So I get that. All right, Marcus, anything else that you wanted to talk about today?
No, appreciate the time, Brian. Yeah, just keep mindful. I mean, with the weather being nice like this, get out there, check your crops, scout around. We're a few weeks away from spraying, so take advantage of that weather. Now's a good time to be scouting those fields.
Great tips. Again, that's Marcus Weatherhead with Corteva out in Montana. Thanks, Marcus. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
You bet. All right, we're going next down to the state of Tennessee. We got Johnny Varell on with us with Extreme Ag. Johnny, how are you today?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Excellent. All right. So we were just talking to Marcus up in Montana. Things are a little bit different down in Tennessee. What are you fighting down there for grass weeds in wheat?
Yeah. So, you know, we have just the general wheat weeds like everybody else does, but one of the biggest ones we have is ryegrass, bluegrass. Yep. You know, those type are our biggest ones we always seem to fight going into spring. Henbit, that's another big one for us. But, you know, the ryegrass is one of the hardest ones for us to control now.
Okay, so what are you doing for it?
Well, we've been running Axial the last few years. This year we switched over to Corteva's new product, Reservant, and gave it a try. And we actually sprayed last week, so it's 82 degrees here today in Tennessee, so great activity going on with those weeds, with the herbicides we put out.
You bet. Yeah, the Reservant has the same active ingredient in it as Axial. It's got a couple others as well for broadleaves. But, yeah, that is certainly a good one. So how about any pre-emerge work? Have you done any pre-stuff to help suppress that ryegrass?
Yes, we've done Zidua in the fall. So we plant all of our wheat is soft red winter wheat planted in October. And so we've done burn down and added Zidua in. And then the last few years we've transitioned into broadcasting our wheat. So we actually come back in December, a couple months later, and usually spray Axiom and maybe a little bit of Harmony out then to try to clean up anything that we might have missed at burn down, to try to help lay some barriers down.
That's a lot of spraying, fall, possibly winter, again in the spring. So this thing is a real problem for yield if you let it go, I assume.
Yeah, and it's not every field. A lot of times we might have to spray the perimeter next to border strips,
yep,
stuff like that,
yep,
where we're getting the ryegrass creeping.
Yep.
But when you're in the south, you know, we get a lot of moisture and a lot of warm temperatures, so the weeds can really grow. And the biggest thing, I think I heard the guy say, well, you got to start cleaning. That's one of the big things we've learned is last year we were in an extreme drought when we were planting our wheat.
Yep.
So we went ahead and sprayed. Some other people did not. The weeds were thriving. You just couldn't see them.
Yep.
They planted their wheat into it, and they really had a hard battle trying to clean up some of the weeds.
I assume if it's a burn down type application, you're also throwing Roundup in to kill anything else that'd be out there now or at that point?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. So usually we burn down with Roundup. And like I said, if we're drilling our wheat, we can wait 2 to 4 days and get that sprout on the wheat and add Zidua in. But
yep,
it's when we went to broadcasting, we kind of threw that out the door, and now we just spray Roundup at planting and then come back December and, you know, and spray again. Of course, we're having to put out insecticides for aphids and other insects like that, but aphids can really be kind of tough on us when the winters are warm, you know, like this past year's been.
Anything else, any other comments about grass control in wheat?
I guess that's about it. Like I said, just make sure you're scouting good. And, you know, we don't spray the same chemistry across all the acres. It's usually about 3 different recs to try to fit exactly what we need, because sometimes one size doesn't fit all with the herbicides you're needing to spray.
So you talked a lot about ryegrass. You also mentioned bluegrass. Anything different you're doing there?
No, the bluegrass, if we can get a good kill at planting, you know, and usually try to spray a week before we plant and get a good kill if any bluegrass is up, it's a lot easier to control the way we work the weed into the ground. If we don't have it sprayed early, a lot of times we'll cover up the bluegrass and spray, and it'll come back, you know, because we'll miss it. We didn't get good contact. So
yep,
it's just the biggest thing I would say is just starting off clean and staying clean. And the reason we don't spray, you know, Axial or Reservant across every acre is the cost, you know. So
yeah,
we really try to scout and only be spraying it where we need it, just like everybody else would. And it's easy to do. One product across every acre is definitely the easiest thing, but sometimes it's not the best application for sure.
Yep, I'm with you. Again, that's Johnny Varel. He's with Extreme Ag down in Tennessee. Johnny, thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Have a great day.
Yep, you too. All right, stay tuned. We're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag coming up right after this.
Because the challenges you face are getting bigger every year, BASF is committed to helping with more than boots on the ground. We're committed to boots in the mud, boots on the steps of your truck, your tractor, your combine, the linoleum tiles of your coffee shop, the concrete of your co-op, the gravel in your shed. So we can listen, learn firsthand, help right now to ensure success. BASF, helping you do the biggest job on earth.
Your farm's greatest challenge is making sure your crop has enough fertility to reach its yield goals. But how do you know if you're applying too much of any one nutrient? Fine-tune your fertility plan with Verify. Your combine collects hundreds of yield data points per acre. Verify takes that data and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, so you can be confident you're not over-applying. Get started today at verify.com. That's V-R-A-F-Y.com.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from farmer Rob Schaefer.
Residuals have become a big part of our chemical programs with trying to battle water hemp, and also mare's tail is our big one. It's done a real good job of controlling those. You don't have to, you know, put a bunch of gallons in your sprayer, cover a lot of acres that way.
Visit valent.com/maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Every season, you're collecting yield data on virtually every acre of your farm. But what good is your data if you never use it? Put it to work with Verify. Verify takes yield data directly from your combine and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, ensuring your crops get what they need, right where they need it, no matter what equipment you run. Go to verify.com to find an expert to help you get started. That's V-R-A-F-Y.com.
Farming comes with trade-offs. An extra pass means dinner in the cab. An early morning becomes a late night. Unnecessary restrictions turn into headaches. But when you make Enlist herbicides the foundation of your herbicide program, the trade-offs will be in your favor. Effective weed control that's ready to work when you are. Flexible tank mix options and neighbor-friendly applications. All without the need to jump through hoops. See what you'll gain with America's most trusted herbicide system protecting your Enlist E3 soybean fields at Enlist.com.
Come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Brian Hefty, and we are now in the Ag PhD mailbag time. If you've got a question for us, you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or you could give us a call, 844-44-AG-PHD. First question is from Derek. We were talking about weed control in pastures, and Derek says, what are your thoughts on crossbow? Well, Derek, honestly, I don't know that we've ever even used crossbow specifically on our farm, but one of the things that we do at all our Ag PhD workshops is we put together this little chart. We call it our chemical component chart, because it's hard to remember all these combination products. So when you say crossbow, then a person usually has to rack their brain thinking, what's in crossbow again? I remember that. Here's what it is. It's the active ingredients from LV4, okay, so 2,4-D that we're all familiar with, 4-pound 2,4-D ester, and then Remedy, or like now we talk often about Remedy Ultra. So Remedy is triclopyr. That doesn't have much residual at all. LV4 has a little bit of residual, but not like a lot or anything. But the reason why we like Remedy is it's a really good brush killer. So a lot of times we'll talk about chaparral or tordon, milestone for killing certain trees and things like that. Well, all three of those have tremendous residual. I mean, the chaparral, you're probably talking 3 years worth of residual. I'm not going to say it's going to kill everything for 3 years, but it's going to be out there for a long time. Tordon, depending on your rate, could be 10 years worth of residual. I'm serious. So again, I'm not saying it's going to kill stuff for 10 years, but you might find a little bit of tordon in your field for 10 years if you use a high enough rate. So where we like crossbow and that combination of 2,4-D to kill a lot of the weeds out there and then Remedy to help out on a bunch of the brush species would be where you say, hey, it's pasture this year, but you know what? Next year, I don't know. I'm thinking about turning some of that into corn or soybeans or whatever other crop. So I have no issue with it. It's just a lot of times the farmers and ranchers we're working with who have pasture, it's going to be pasture long term, and they'd rather have longer term weed control out of a milestone, tordon, chaparral, or anything that contains one of those active ingredients or any of those active ingredients. That way they don't have as much spraying to do in the future. But yes, Crossbow is certainly a fine product. All right, next one. This is from Harvey in Illinois, and he wrote us a letter. Thank you for that, Harvey. We don't get a lot of written letters anymore, a lot of emails. But anyway, Harvey says here, being a non-farmer, I've enjoyed your Ag PhD program over the years. I don't farm per se, but I do have a large garden, about 3/4 acre. My soils are on the clay side. I grow peppers, onions, kohlrabi, tomatoes, eggplant, cucumbers, and pumpkins. I plant everything as plants that I started from seed. Anyway, he says, the only weed problem I have is controlling Peruvian daisy. Can you recommend any pre-emerge herbicides that would be effective at controlling it? Okay, so Harvey, let me first say, if you were able to somehow spot treat with Roundup, Roundup should do a pretty decent job killing Peruvian daisy. Otherwise, there are some other herbicides that will work. So flumioxazin, that's what we call Valor in our soybean crop, for example. Then you've got Outlook and Prowl, as well as Isoxaben Gallery. So you've got a few products. So you could look up Gallery, Freehand, Broadstar, or SureGuard. I think those are all labeled for like nursery, landscape kind of things. Otherwise, you can certainly look up Valor, Outlook, and Prowl, and just see if the crops that you're trying to raise, you can use those herbicides. Okay, so you might have to kind of split it up, because I don't think there's any one of those where you could plant all the crops you're talking about and get by just fine. Another one would be Preen, and that one is very similar to the pendimethalin or Prowl. So that's another one you could look up. Just look at the label and what it says for what crops you can raise, but all of those should have activity. I'm not going to say that they're going to be perfect, okay, on Peruvian daisy, but they will definitely help you. So that's what I would take a look at. All right, let's see here. Next one is from Michael from Minnesota, who says, I have a large vegetable garden. I put these two vegetable questions right back to back here. Anyway, he says, my yield suffers in my corn, peppers, beans, because I got a bunch of weeds. And so this year I'm planning to go with a different strategy. When I plant, I'm going to test my soil and see what's out there. And I want to spray Roundup and burn everything down. I'll be waiting for 2 weeks to till up the garden and then add some nutrients. Any suggestions? All right. So first of all, for anyone who's listening and you've got a garden, you have a small area we're talking about, I get it that, okay, like in Michael's case here, he's got a 30 by 120 garden. Or the last question, it was 3/4 acre. I realize those are pretty big gardens, but in terms of acres, it's nothing. So my point is, it's small enough that any amount of fertilizer, any amount of herbicide you need to throw out there, your total expense is going to be low. So our advice is always pour the coals to it. I mean, there's no reason why you can't heavily fertilize that area, get everything you have there up to speed, up to the level it needs to be. So our suggestion, Michael, is soil test. And when you get that soil test or tests, send them to us and then we'll tell you what we think. We can give you our best recommendations, because our number one piece of advice, and a lot of people, I get it, we're the weed of the week guys, we're always talking about herbicides, but honestly, our best advice is always this. We want you to have an amazing crop out there, so the crop is so thick, it chokes out the weeds. Now, it's tough when you're raising some of those vegetable crops, because they're not going to grow tall. They're not going to choke out the weeds like, let's say, wheat, for example, which was our topic today. So that's why, in a lot of cases, there's no way around it. Either you're hand pulling the weeds or you got to use a herbicide. Here's the problem. Roundup's no longer labeled for home use. Now, it can still be used on a farm, so I don't know how that where that distinction is exactly, but I'll just say again, Roundup is not labeled for home use, okay? So if your garden's a farm, all right, fine. But I'm just saying, pay attention to that. That's first thing. Preen, I mentioned that just a little bit ago. It's the same as old Treflan that farmers have used in soybeans and other crops for over 50 years. Preen cannot be used where you're going to grow corn, though. But just check the label because it is approved on many other vegetable crops. Preen has soil residual that'll hold weeds in check for several weeks to months, depending on your use rate. Now, whenever you're raising sweet corn, if there's a farmer nearby, I'd look for some Outlook or Dual. Those are really good pre-emerge herbicides to keep the grass weeds and a few broadleaves at bay, hopefully, until crop canopies. So, Michael, that's our best advice. All right, next one here is from Ethan, who is from Kentucky. Just wondering if we've had any experience with, and he mentions a biocatalyst product here that a company makes that you would add to dry fertilizer. No, Ethan, we haven't tried any biocatalysts specifically with fertilizer. I'll have to read up on that product a little bit more to see exactly what's in there. But I will say this. Anytime you're going to try anything new, I'm fine with that. Just get some advice and find out if it should work in your situation or not. But if people are telling you, oh, this should work, okay, that's fine. Just try it in a few acres and let's see. Because my farm's different than your farm, and your farm's different than somebody else's farm, even fairly near you. So you're never going to know with a lot of these things, especially a lot of these biologicals. There are a lot of biological products out there. They actually do work if you get them in the right spot, in the right situation. But I don't know if you have those conditions. I'm not sure about this product. I don't have a lot of information here other than you gave me the name of the product. But no, we have not tested that. I would say we're constantly working with new biologicals. We call them natural products. But we found many things that have worked. We've also found a number of things that just haven't worked in our research in our region of the country. We do research in about 5 or 6 different states right around here, kind of where we farm in South Dakota and these surrounding states. All right, we've got a lot more questions to get to right after this. Got a super interesting one right after the break. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Nothing but net. Win your soybean season with the fast knockdown and lasting broad-spectrum control of Elevest Insect Control from FMC. Take on armyworms, stink bugs, soybean loopers, and more with the maximized ratio of premier active ingredients for better overall control of more than 40 labeled pests. Visit your FMC retailer or elevest.ag.fmc.com to up your game this season. Always read and follow all label directions.
For the smallest investment with the biggest impact on yield, upgrade your planter with Germinator closing wheels from Farm Shop MFG. To see how we stack up against the competition at a fraction of the cost, call us at 712-520-6051.
Get more durability for less downtime with Soil Warrior strip tillage from Environmental Tillage Systems. Improve fertilizer efficiency and reduce passes and fuel usage. Now that's ROI. Learn more about ETS at soilwarrior.com.
If you look close enough, you can see the hidden potential within your fields. That's why an agro-liquid nutrition plan starts with the crop and identifies the precise combination of primary nutrients while focusing on the support of secondary and micronutrients. So every nutrient is working in harmony for your crop to reach its full potential, maximizing growth while offering lower use rates. Apply less, expect more, precisely. Find an AgroLiquid dealer at agroliquid.com.
On your farm, you spend thousands on fertilizer every season. But how do you know if any nutrient you apply is paying for itself? Build a fertility plan like never before with Verify. With Verify's soil point to yield analysis, you can automatically see the connection between your soil test and yield data to see which fertilizer dollars will make you money and which won't. Go to verify.com to get started today. That's VRAFY.com.
Morton Buildings has served the American farmer for more than 120 years. From manufacturing our own building components to constructing your building, Morton takes pride in being the industry leader in post-frame construction by providing a quality building and exceptional customer service. A Morton is built to last for generations. To get started on your next project, please visit MortonBuildings.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Brian Hefty. We're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time. If you've got a question for us, just email us, radio@agphd.com, or you can give us a call here, 844-44-AG-PHD. Again, that's 844-442-4743. Okay, this question I think is kind of interesting. It's from out in, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, right in that area. From Sarah, who says, I got a unique situation here where it's a preserved farm, commercial greenhouse, and basically the State Ag Development Committee is forcing this greenhouse, actually forced the greenhouse to get torn down because they weren't happy with the amount of disturbed soil. And so anyway, there have been lawyers involved, court hearings. Years later, the producer needs to replace the soil at the same slope, pre-disturbance. So let me just stop right there, Sarah, and say, this sounds like, yes, you're right. This is something unique and interesting. I feel bad for whoever's involved in this because it sounds like an awful lot of money getting spent for something that nobody intended to go wrong or whatever happened here. So I don't know the whole story, but anyway, here's your question. Can one crop, like let's say corn or hay, be grown to determine the success of the soil rehabilitation? Because this state ag department is asking that a sequence of crops be grown in the disturbed area and the undisturbed area to see and verify that, hey, all these crops are growing successfully, to see if this soil rehabilitation is fine, and they want to do some yield comparison of the two areas, undisturbed and disturbed. So anyway, can one crop be grown, or is a full crop rotation needed to determine the success of replacing the soil? All right, here are my thoughts, Sarah. We have done a lot of things where, let's say there's somebody has to dig a line through our field, like a water line, for example. This has happened where rural water, yep, they got to dig a line through our field. And I mean, we're never going to try to stop progress. We want these things to happen. We had this, well, Aeros Data Center. They have set, if you've seen satellite imagery on a lot of different websites before, odds are high it came from Aeros Data Center. That's 4 miles from our farm right here. So we've got a field where they had to have, they needed more power, and they had to have an electrical line go right through our field, dig it in. Okay, I don't have any issue with that. They paid us for the crop. It was in season. And so we've had all these situations before. I will promise you this. If that soil is not put back, the topsoil is not put back the same, you're going to have yield loss, and you're going to have it for many years. But even if the topsoil is put back as good as you possibly think you could ever do it, it's not going to be the same for many years. So, I guess I don't know what you're looking for or what they are looking for in this situation, but I'll put it to you this way. Let's say they do the best job they think they possibly could do, putting topsoil back on top of the subsoil, and you go, oh, this should be fine. It looks fine. Even when it looks fine, it's not going to produce as much yield. It needs quite a few years of growing a crop there, and then eventually it will straighten itself out. So what I would do is I would soil test immediately, and then I'd make sure we're fertilizing so we get everything up to speed, because something may be missing. But then the other component that for all of us farmers, we talk about fertility, we talk about picking varieties and killing the weeds and all this stuff. What we don't talk much about is soil life. But soil life is the whole key, and that's what I'm talking about here. You've got to get the soil life going again. You got to build soil organic matter back up potentially. But even mycorrhiza fungi, super important for getting a lot of different nutrients like phosphorus into the plant. And until the mycorrhiza fungi reestablish there, even if the ground just sat idle for a year, you lost a bunch of the mycorrhiza. So you got to get them reestablished, and it just takes time. How long? I'd say 5 to 10 years. That's my experience. Might be different for you, might be better, might be easier. But yeah, in one crop, it's possible that you could get back to yield. And even with this other spot that you've got that's undisturbed, but it's very unlikely that that's going to happen in 1 year. All right, next question is from Matt in Wisconsin. He says, hey guys, I'm looking for some agronomic advice. Do you provide a consulting service? Matt, we do not. But if you have specific questions, just send them to us. We're happy to look at your soil tests, talk about your weeds, insects, diseases, anything else that's going on your farm, drainage, you name it. So just send us your questions, and we'd be happy to answer those. All right, let's see here. Next one is, oh yeah, this one was kind of interesting. So Todd from Iowa says, we've been researching for some time the concept of planting corn in wider rows, like 60 inches apart, and then there would be more plants in that row because we're going to up the population a little bit for the row, not necessarily for the field, but for the row. But anyway, and then farming the ground in between, he says. This concept allows for a more intensive harvesting of sunlight during the primary part of the growing season and allows all types of crops to be grown simultaneously with corn, again, during the principal part of the growing season. This is in contrast to the cover crop experience at our latitude in the fall and spring. There was a lot of interest around here in cover crops, but that seems to have died off a little bit because we're mainly corn and soybeans. Anyway, we're asked all the time if shading by the corn is a huge detriment to this overall concept, but that answer depends on if you do anything about the corn shading. So what we're looking at is these short stature corns. What do you think of those? Is that going to be something that is going to get to be a bigger deal in the future? Anyway, I've learned a lot of great information from you guys, so please keep up the good work with all your shows. And he sent along some pictures of this. And basically, let's see, what has he got in here? They're just raising something in between a second crop. Oh, there's a pea crop that was mature here. And it looks like they get another crop in here. I'm not sure exactly what that was. But anyway, so look, if you want to try raising a crop in between your corn rows, that's unbelievably challenging. And here's the thing. We always talk about, hey, try stuff. And sometimes it's going to sound crazy, and sometimes people like me are going to tell you it's not going to work. I really don't think it's going to work, but I could be wrong. So maybe it'll be fine. I can tell you this. We tried the whole six rows of corn, six rows of soybean thing a few years ago. And you know what we found? Oh, it was unbelievably easy for us because we have high fertility and we're trying to do everything we can to raise a great crop. It was unbelievably easy for us to raise 300 bushel corn. In fact, in those six rows of corn, you know, again, six rows of corn, six rows of soybeans. I mean, if I'm not shooting for 350 plus, I'd be awfully sad. And so immediately you go, oh my gosh, that sounds amazing. I'm doing that. But here's the thing. In between those rows, the soybeans got killed. Not killed. But I'm just saying, normally we'd get 70 plus bushel beans on our best fields, 80, and we were lucky to get 50. So we hurt our soybean yield dollar and cents wise as much as we helped our corn yield. And we had a lot more work and a lot more hassle because we had something in between. So that's one of the big problems that you got here is, how are you going to kill the weeds? Because I look at, hey, anything growing in between my corn, that's a weed, and that's going to be tough to deal with. So your system might work. I just have a lot of reservations about it. Now, as far as a short stature corn, yeah, there are companies working on developing that. And as far as grain corn, I mean, if we can get the yield, that would be amazing. I just don't know if we're going to get there, but we might. We'll see. The big thing for anybody out there, if you're going to do any, a lot of people do side-by-sides, for example, please don't try side-by-sides with short-stature corn, because the short-stature corn will lose if you've got 8 rows of that versus 8 rows of a tall corn, because the tall corn's going to shade it out, just like the beans got shaded out in our 6x6 example I was giving you. So make sure you're testing it appropriately. But hopefully we'll come with some good yielding hybrids. I don't think we're there yet, but hopefully we will in the future, because especially like harvesting grain, why do we need all that plant? If it's just for grain, let's have shorter plants. That sounds great to me. Well, stay tuned. We'll get to more of your questions next.
Want a product that will give you nitrogen all season long? Then you want to try Envita. Envita gets directly into the cells of the plants, and it's easy to apply, foliar or in furrow. Envita provides the flexibility you need for your farm practices. Whether you want to reduce your nitrogen and maintain yield, or maintain your nitrogen and increase yield, Envita fits your farm. Envita SC formulation is OMRI registered. To learn more about Envita, visit azotic.com. That's AZOTIC.com.
Are you ready for better efficiency, more productivity, higher yields? Then you're ready for John Deere Precision Technology, which starts with three core pieces. First, a G5 display gives fast views of your work and a window to future technology. A Starfire receiver gives you sub-inch repeatable accuracy without an RTK base station. And a JD Link modem gives you a live view of your entire operation. Get precise and talk with your John Deere dealer or visit johndeere.com/basic.
Your farm data platform might let you manage your fertilizer plan by helping you set sample points, determine management zones, or create fertilizer recommendations. With Verify, you can do all that. But what Verify does that no one else can is take yield data straight from your combine, correlate this info to soil test points, and immediately generate variable rate fertilizer maps based on your nutritional goals. Whether you want to build soil levels, balance your field for uniform nutrition, or maintain fertility levels by simply applying what you removed at harvest. And with full integration with John Deere Operations Center, Verify can send recommendations directly to application equipment, no matter the color. Sign up for your Verify account today at verify.com and keep your farm moving. That's VRAFY.com.
The hard-working, independent spirit of rural America can often be isolating. It's not often discussed, but mental health issues are real. Now's the time to lead by example, talk openly, and show that a strong mind is just as important as a strong body. FMC is proud to be working toward ending the misconceptions around mental health. Through awareness, guidance, and action, together we can uproot the stigma.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe with Heads Up seed treatment. Heads Up guards your seed from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking your seed dealer for Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. We're getting to your questions on today's show. If you've got a question for us, just email us, radio@agphd.com. We're live in the Morton studio, and we just got an email in from Brent. And Brent, I apologize because he says, hey, did you guys ever answer my question from a couple weeks ago? We probably didn't, Brent. I don't even know what I got here. 200 questions. I'm trying to get through them as quick as I can. We're going to have to do a couple of all mailbag shows here coming up, Janelle. Our sister Janelle is producing the show for us today. Anyway, so here's Brent's question. I have a soil test where the cation exchange capacity is 7. So it's relatively light soil. Potassium soil test values average 60 parts per million and 2% base saturation K. Sodium base saturation is 4 to 5%. Calcium is 70 to 75%, and magnesium is 13%. Now, the sodium levels are high due to the irrigation water. So that's the reason why we see that 4 to 5%. Anyway, he says, I've applied gypsum to help flush out the high sodium. What's my best bet for potassium? Should I put potassium chloride on? And if so, can I, or how much can I apply in broadcast as a max? Neil Kinsey suggests using potassium sulfate in these instances, but the cost of it's almost double the potash. So what would your advice be? Brent, my advice is put potash on. So if you want to try some potassium sulfate, and I'm not saying Neil's wrong, you can do that. But Neil also often talks about, hey, you can't spend yourself into the poorhouse. If you have a budget, I mean, you got to spend according to your budget. So if you want to try some potassium sulfate side by side or split a field or whatever versus potash, I would do that. Could there be a slight gain in potassium sulfate? It's possible, especially if you need the sulfate, which it sounds like you do. Because here's the thing. You're going to flush that sodium out with sulfur. The other thing Neil says with sodium is it takes about 1 pound of sulfur to remove about 1 pound of sodium. So there are a lot of ways to get sodium out there. You mentioned gypsum. Now that's fine, but I've got another question here from out in Montana that's basically the same kind of thing. He asks, all right, well, when should I use gypsum versus, let's say, calcitic lime versus dolomitic lime? Look, I don't know, Brent, what your soil pH is, but I will say this. Is it possible that if, let's say, you increase your calcium, that your sodium would start to go down? It's possible. But the bigger thing that we're always after is, hey, let's look at sulfur to remove that sodium. So that's what I want to do, and I want to push that potassium, especially when you're only at 60 parts per million because your soil is so light. You got to think of two things. Number one, potassium isn't going to stay in the soil like it would for me when I have heavy soil. Two, so in other words, you might even have to put potassium on twice per year. But two, it's not going to take much to get your base saturation K up to 4% and beyond. You not only have to be at least at 4% is what we always say, but you got to have enough pounds out there to raise a great crop. And 60 parts per million, 120 pounds, that's not a lot. That's not a lot. So I'm putting a lot of potash out there and raising my level up. And then somehow, some way, I'm getting more sulfur out there. If you get some through whatever lime source, like for us, we get a bunch of sulfur through our lime. That is one thing that you could do. So we get water treatment lime, and that would maybe help you. But otherwise, most people are talking about gypsum, but you don't need lots of calcium. You're already at 70 or 75%. You can use a little bit of gypsum, but I wouldn't do much if it was me. I'd look more at elemental sulfur and ammonium sulfate. So somehow, some way, I'd be using some sulfur. So those are my suggestions. And anyway, to finish up with this Montana question, drainage could certainly be an issue. And that's the whole thing. Like with Brent's question, drainage is not an issue with high sodium. So if you have high sodium in Montana, you a lot of times have heavier soil. So we got to take a look at how do we get that sodium out of that soil. Number one, we have to have good drainage. Okay. So with Brent, 7 CEC, he's already got good drainage. Montana, you probably don't. You might have to put tile in. That's the first step. Second step, get some sulfur out there to flush the sodium out. So that's the big thing. And then if you need magnesium, so like in Brent's case, okay, with a 7 CEC, his magnesium is down to 13%. That's a little on the low side. So if Brent needs lime, I'm using dolomitic lime. That's got more magnesium than a higher magnesium level than the calcitic. The calcitic lime has very little magnesium. That's usually what we're talking about in Montana, because in a lot of cases, there's plenty of clay in that soil. It's heavier soil, which means there's plenty of magnesium there. So you don't need the magnesium. That's where you want to push the calcitic lime. Okay. Next couple of questions here are about closing wheels. So first one is from Lee in Pennsylvania. He says he's got an older John Deere 7000 planter, and he's looking at a tear down and rebuild and trying to decide whether to keep the standard gauge wheel profile or change to reduced inner diameter gauge wheels. Also debating whether to change my closing wheels to a spike design. And then Grant has a similar question. He says he's from Indiana looking to update closing wheels. He hears ads on our show about Germinator closing wheels. What do they do differently? Are they worth the money? Okay. Oh, and also I'd like to hear your opinion on pounds of pressure for your closing wheels and distance between them as well. Grant and Lee, here's my problem. If you tell me, oh, I've got grass in my wheat, like we were talking about earlier today, I can give you the names of two or three herbicides that are going to kill those grasses, depending on what specific grasses you have. And it's pretty easy. It's pretty cut and dry. The problem when we start talking about closing wheels and gauge wheels, and Lee's comment, he also says, I never mud in my crop. Everybody wants to go at a different time. Everybody has a little bit different soil, different levels of organic matter, sand, clay, all these things. So it gets really hard. Here's really what I'm after. Number one, I want to make sure my planting depth is right. You got to get that corn planted 1.5 to 2.5 inches deep. I personally prefer 2 to 2.25. That's number one. Get the seed placed evenly, spaced evenly, always at the same depth. The next thing is we've got to make sure that we close that trench and that we haven't created a sidewall compaction situation. So I hate to say this, but it's often, like every spring, we get complaints and guys say, oh, yeah, there's something wrong with my corn. You go out there, you dig stuff up, and it's like, oh, I can find your trench right here. Here's this V trench, and you smash the sides. So the challenge is, I get it that 90, 95% of your field might be ready is 100% ready. That's the thing. And so you go through some areas where it's a little wet and then you create an issue. You don't close that seed trench just right. You don't close the furrow just right. So you switch closing wheels. Well, then you might have this other problem where, oh, now we're creating this other issue. And sometimes like spiked wheels, if you get things too close, sometimes you can actually lift that seed back up. And so it's trial and error, I hate to say this, and it's really watching what you're doing out there in the field. So do we like the Germinator closing wheels? Yes. As far as what you're going to do for type of closing wheel and all your other settings and down pressure and everything else, it's a field by field, it's a farmer by farmer type situation. We could spend a day on that. And actually, Janelle, we should probably bring somebody in to talk specifically. Well, I'm sure we will get some of the equipment people that are occasionally on the show and just say, hey, we want to talk about gauge wheels and closing wheels for a show. I think that would be a good idea as we get a little bit closer to planting season in our area. All right, let's see. I'm looking for one more quick question I can get to before the end of the day. Oh, here's one. So this one is from our friend Diego, who says, hey, in Argentina, we started having a presence of corn leafhopper and this disease called corn stunt spiroplasma. Our losses are big. Do you have any experience with any of this stuff? Oh, and by the way, he says, P.S., I just bought my first combine and I'm harvesting corn with my own equipment. Well, congratulations on that, Diego. But no, we haven't had corn leafhopper issues, and I've never heard of this disease, this corn stunt spiroplasma. But there are a lot of diseases that get introduced by bugs. There are lots of insecticides out there that will kill corn leafhoppers, just like they'll kill many other bugs. So you got to make sure you're scouting for the bug, spraying timely, and then you shouldn't have the disease. Good luck with that. All right. Well, before we go, just want to say thanks to my sister Janelle for producing the show for us today. Thanks to everybody who wrote in with questions. We really appreciate that. And thanks to you for listening. And be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.